This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm doing a Clickers SOS Save Our Stories interview with Bonnie Smith. Bonnie is in San Jose, California, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're conducting this interview over the telephone. Today's date is December 15th, 2008. It is 1:33 in the afternoon. And Bonnie, thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview with me. And please tell me about your quilt, Obama in Blue.
First off, it's a screen print. And I never have done much screen printing, but I thought it was a fast way to get something done, so that's why I decided to use screen print. The Obama in Blue, it all came about for me, an organization I belong to, a Yahoo group. Sue Whalen came on and said, after the election, I have this piece that I made. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get together several pieces of fiber art and exhibit somewhere? You know, is anyone interested? And I even pulled that email just to be sure that what she had said was in that spirit, that let's come together and as an artist group and exhibit. Let's do something, which is what we do on that group. And someone came back and answered within just a, within minutes. And I pulled her email also to go over it in my mind. And she was very upset and abrupt that she thought it was political and the list wasn't for anything political, and she wanted it off, which struck me strangely that we are artists and this is what we do. We take an event, a feeling, a movement, and we run with it, and we create from that. So I didn't really understand, so I just emailed back Sue and said, hey, three words, count me in, and I signed my name. Within 24 hours, I believe she had maybe 40, 45, maybe even more, more quilters involved or fiber artists or how people want to, you know, address themselves involved in this. And then I had to come up with an idea. And so I had to sit and think about that for a minute, and then it came to me very fast. I would use the image of his face. I think the man has a beautiful face. As an artist, I'm always looking at people's faces. I've done some painting, and so I'm always looking closely. So I went to a site where I knew I could get a copyright-free image and made a copy, handed it to a friend, and said, you know, make me a screen print. And it went from there, blue seeing the natural color. It's a natural Muslim background, and then the stitching is red, so it's red, white, and blue. And it's 20 images. The finished piece is 43 inches wide by 40 inches tall. And when I got done, well, every place I show it, everyone who sees it just loves it. So I knew I'd done the right work. So that's really how Obama in Blue came about for me. And as everyone knows, it's just been picking up and picking up more steam. So that's how my piece came about.
So how do you use this quilt, or how do you plan to use this quilt?
Right now I have a gallery. I live in downtown San Jose, and I have a street gallery, my personal gallery. And right now it is hanging in my gallery for people on the street to see. I want people to know that I'm proud of what's happening. I'm hoping the exhibit will travel, and if the exhibit doesn't travel, I will find another place for it to be exhibited. I want the world to see what I made.
Why do you think Obama has inspired so much art?
I believe it's the idea of a new day. I read a lot, follow politics pretty closely, and listening to people, it's the idea of a new day, you know, something fresh, something very intellectual. I was originally a Hillary Clinton supporter, And when she didn't get the nod to run for president, my daughter had mentioned to me, "Oh, Mom, you know, you just got to, you know, jump on the Obama bandwagon with us." And I said, "You know, give me some time." So I started listening to his speeches, and by the time I listened to a few, some interviews, I thought, this is something we haven't had for a while. I felt like it was truth, inspiring. People were talking, people who normally don't talk about politics, people were, I know, who were lining up to vote, registering to vote, were excited to be voting, were letting people know this was going to be the first time that they voted. So I think having intelligence, I think just the word hope is very important. Hope for our society.
How does this work compare to your normal work, the work you do usually?
Well, I have two, you know, I'm a very flat working artist. I work mostly, I don't deal in depth perception, shadow, or that. I deal flat. I want it to be right in your face. I want it to be color. I want it to stop you. Whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter. But I want it to get your attention. And if I can just get it for a few seconds, that's what I'm after. And if I can get it for longer, then even better. So in a way, even though I'd never worked with screen prints except one other time before, and I didn't realize how tricky they are, and it's along the same line, straightforward, in your face.
So somebody looking at this would say, yes, Bonnie Smith made this.
They might, you know, once they saw the name on the piece, they would go, oh yeah, she works straightforward. If that makes any sense to you. Because
mm-hmm.
I deal in, even in hand-dyed fabrics, I want them to be very intense, very solid. I don't like that. I don't care for that play in marbling or anything like that, in texture like that. I want it to be smooth. I want you to be able to just say, I get it. So, I think you could recognize it.
Tell me about your interest in quilt making.
Well, I came from a long line of quilters, and I'm fortunate enough to have some of their quilts. And my family knows that I'm interested in quilts and in preserving them, so I have a few. But my father's side and my mother's side both, people quilt. And I always admired them, but I always made clothing, and I didn't start quilting until about 2000. I was injured on an on-work accident, and one time I was housebound, chairbound, wheelchair-bound. So I knew I had to do something, so I thought, I cannot make another pair of slacks or another blouse. Where am I going to wear these clothes? So I took a quilt class from a local store, and that started making quilts. I fell in love with it. I would stay up at all hours of the night. My husband traveled, so a lot of times I could stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning just doing what I do. And then we decided to purchase a new home. And it had these big, huge walls and, like I said, a street-side gallery. And I told my husband, we're not buying any new art. I'm making all the art. And he said, go for it. And that's where my interest in fiber art started. And being able to kind of narrow myself down, and that was the first thought of, I've always worked in black, and I've always worked in solids, but that was, that sort of, I don't know what it was, maybe what happened to me, the injury, everything that happened afterwards, something within me made it okay to just create what I wanted to create and not worry about anything. And I believe when I quilted, I maybe used a pattern once or twice. I have trouble following patterns, So I always found myself having to create my own patterns and make adjustments and that type of thing. So that's how it all sort of got started for me.
Tell me about your street gallery.
Oh, I love it. We live in downtown San Jose. We have a two-floor condo. And the downstairs is to be used how you want, but it is zoned for business. And it's glass doors, like you were entering a big department store with glass doors on these windows on either side. And I looked at my husband and said, can I have this area for myself to put my work in? And he was like, well, sure. So I love it. When I finish work, I can go down and rotate it, and it's a vanity gallery. I just recently started inviting people to the gallery, and to deal with the Obama, to try to get some more information out there about this exhibit. I started inviting newspapers and telling them where I am, and city officials, and I've had people come say, can I come by if you're not home? And so I tell them, yes, I got tons of window. And the sun never comes in, so I never have to worry about it. I can leave all my work up, and people love it. People love it. It's wonderful when I go into another condo around the corner or something somewhere, and someone says, I saw your work. I saw your work. Or they'll pick out one work that they specifically like. So it's kind of a way of exhibiting and, I think, just making people's day a little better. They see something a little more interesting out of the norm.
So describe your studio.
My studio is when we lived in our other home, my studio, I had a huge kitchen, and I worked in the kitchen. And we did not eat in the kitchen. I worked in the kitchen, I cooked in the kitchen, and then we ate in the family room. And my husband had asked me to please, when we moved to, not do that again, because he liked interacting with me and he hated me being in another room while I was doing my work. So my studio now is in our family room, and it's a very large room. It's about, 20 by 17, and my family has allowed me to have about three-quarters of it for my studio, and then my family has a TV and their table and, a little coffee table and chairs and where they come and sit and, I guess, join me while I work in the evenings. But I have, as most people, several pieces of equipment. I have several machines and my computer and my lights and my books and my fabrics and all of my stuff. Pictures up, things that inspire me. Great lighting, a good window to work by, and a big design wall. And it's a very comfortable space for me, very comfortable.
Do you work on more than one thing at a time, or are you a one thing at a time kind of person?
I'm about a three at a time person. I normally have one large piece that I'm working on. Normally the next piece is either on the drawing board. I'm taking notes, doing research about it, and then normally I have something that just comes up that I need to stop in the middle of everything and just do, because I either feel a need for it or I just, and normally that'll be something very small, a small project. So I try to limit myself to three because I just can't spread myself out any further than that and get anything quality and get it done within any type of a good timeline.
Tell me about the art and quilt groups you belong to.
I belong to Studio Art Quilt Associates, and I have belonged to them, that group, since I believe it's 2002, 2003, and that's a very inspiring group to belong to. There just is a magnanimous group of people involved in that and a lot of really giving people. And I think sometimes I'm lucky I live in San Jose, the Bay Area of California, because there's a lot of members here, so we can get together and have a lot of meetings. You can do a lot of networking with them. And it just sort of exposes you to what's happening in the fiber art world. And they're constantly educating us, whether it's on, you know, learning how to use a computer better. They do interviews. They do podcasts. They're trying to expose you to what's happening around the world and get you out of your little area. They have meetings across the country every so often and different locations. Another good way to get you out of your area. It's inspiring to belong to such a group of people. I became a professional art member with them, and I believe it was in 2006. And that was wonderful to have them judge my work and say, you know, we think you're worthy to belong to this group within our group. And it just sort of elevates your thinking of what you can do. There is no, how do I say, nothing is narrow. Everything is wide open to them. Any new idea you have sounds great. And someone's always there to, you know, give you a pat on the back and say, I think that's a great idea and go forward with it, or, you know, tell me what you've been up to interesting lately. You know, it's just getting that camaraderie. It's very easy when you do fiber art, and I think not just fiber art, but for artists in general, to get within your little zone. And when those meetings come up or you get an email from someone telling you about an open house someone's having or an exhibit someone's involved in, it's you just, you know, get in the car and you go. First, because you want to support the group, and secondly, once you get there, then you realize, wow, you're seeing something normally just spectacular. And, again, getting to meet and see people sometimes you haven't seen in a while. That's the actually only quilt group that I belong to. I also belong to Women's Caucus for Art, which is a national group about the same size, I believe, as SAGWA. I think they're about 3,000 strong. And that's a group of women doing all sorts of art, whether it's monotype, painting, sculpture, weaving. Women sometimes doing things I never even heard of, seen that are fascinating, whether it's painting and stenciling on glass. I'm just always in awe when I see their work and what some of them have been up to and the ideas that they've come up with. So those are the two groups that I belong to.
So do you think of yourself as an artist or a quilt maker, or do you even make the distinction?
You know, for a long time, I feel like I first started as a quilter because that's what I did, was quilt. And then I felt of myself more as a fiber artist. But I've evolved, I realized, over about the last year and a half, and I just tell people I'm an artist because I now dabble in photography and painting. So, you know, why bother to explain all these different areas and just say you're an artist? That covers a lot.
What do you think is the biggest challenge confronting art quilt makers today?
How do you mean that?
Any way you want to take it.
Well, I think sometimes for quilt makers, it's the idea of people thinking of little old ladies, I guess, and I don't know. I know some little old ladies that do some pretty dynamic work. So I sometimes take offense to that when people say that, because I think, you know, I know some ladies who are, you know, have snow white hair that do some of the most fascinating work I've ever seen. So I'm not sure where that comes from, and I don't really like it when I hear it, but I've learned to tread pretty lightly on that. I think sometimes it's just being accepted. There are so many, you know, great organizations out there that do wonderful exhibits for just traditional quilts for art quilts, and they're growing all the time, and I think this that helps quilters a lot get acceptance. Yeah, I think sometimes they don't feel like they have enough acceptance, and fiber art's pretty much the same way. I think it's something that we're always moving against. I'm always amazed when people who know that I create fiber art and haven't, you know, made a bed quilt for, you know, many years will look at me and say, how's that quilting going? And I'm like, you realize that I use quilting as my medium to hold everything together. That's what it's used for. You realize that, don't you? And normally they'll go, oh, yes, 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 yes. So I realize sometimes maybe I, you know, bring it on myself. Maybe I'm a little too quick to, you know, bite back. That maybe I decided those same people when I run into them, I'm going to try something different on them. I'm just going to smile at them and try not to get into that discussion with them.
Save yourself.
Right.
So whose works are you drawn to and why? It doesn't necessarily have to be quilt makers.
You mean painters?
That could be anybody.
Oh, geez. Now you caught me.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It could be a quilter, too.
Quilting, I have to tell you, I try to stay away from looking at other people's work too much. I think it's very easy for people to be drawn into their work, for you to carry their thoughts and their ideas or maybe their colors. So as far as painting, Emily Carr, she's a Canadian artist. I just started studying her a couple years ago and became fascinated with her boldness of what she was doing. She's from the Canadian, I'm not sure exactly what they call that area up there. But she was very 1920s, 1930s. Emily Carr just, she's one of few women who was getting work out but still not getting pay or notoriety because she was a woman artist. But that never stopped or slowed her down. She just kept at her craft steadily until she died. But, again, she had such boldness to her work. She liked to paint trees, which I'm not a tree person at all. But she adds a depth and could just go into the forest and plant herself for days or weeks on end and do nothing but sketch and maybe do watercolor and then go back to her humble home and paint. From what I've read, it wasn't until actually she died that then the Canadians really, I guess, gave her recognition that she deserved. But she's one. I love her story. I love how she refused to get married when women were pushed to get married and how she turned down suitors and started a school to teach even children how to create art and just fought against her family just to get inheritance that was coming to her, because they really just prefer that she get married and just, you know, do what she was supposed to do, the women thing. But she wanted her inheritance and money to study her art, do what she wanted to do. So I think there's that stubbornness to her that she was creating her art at any cost. And if it meant living in a little trailer in the middle of the forest for a while, that was okay. She would do what she needed to do. And it's very inspiring because you don't run into people today who can give it all up. Jackson Pollock is another one. I guess sometimes, from what I've read about Jackson Pollock, he created this new, this drip method, and I just very drawn to how tormented he was. You know, I think we're all looking for someone to love us, someone to love our work, and I think the saddest thing about him was I think he died and still wasn't sure if people liked him or liked his work. But again, he stepped outside the box and did something that no one else was doing and kept at it. Kept at it. You know, he traded these little paintings for food. You know, he just kept at it and refused to give up. So
how did you come to find Emily Carr?
I had been doing watercolors for a while, and I have a mentor that I take everything to, whether it's sewing, painting, whatever, whatever I'm up to, and show this person. And one day he was looking at the watercolors and said, you know, he wrote this name down. He said, I want you to go get a book on this woman, because your work reminds me of hers. And I said, okay. So I looked at the books and realized I could not see my work at all. And I could not see anything I did in this woman's work at all. I'm not sure what he's seeing, but I've been seeing him now for several years. And it's nice to be able to stop by and show someone what you're working on, a progress, a paper you've written, and get a critique on it, and know that it's totally unemotional. So that's how I came about studying Emily Carr. And then the more you learn about her, the more you want to know. Because she is a Canadian national treasure. And that, they do say now, that she is a Canadian national treasure. So it's like finally people realized, finally, it's okay to be, you know, a woman artist. You know, she hung with several other groups. She had a large group of five or six other artists, and she was the only woman within the group. And even within the group, from what I've read, I don't think she always got positive feedback because she was a woman. But she never gave up. I guess that's what I'm always looking for, is somebody who never gives up, is tenacious, and just says, without saying it in the work, I can do this. And that's something about myself I've realized I have, and I've realized after studying Pollock, Emily, that we have in common, that we're tenacious, we just are not going to give up. I've had people say, you know, maybe, you know, if you put a little more depth into your work, more shadow or this or that, and I look at them and I just, like, this is my work. It's flat. That's how I see art. That's how I see work. It's flat. So I thought, I'm not going to change my work for anyone. I'm going to follow some examples here of people I think who, you know, are pretty important.
Tell me more about your mentor. How did you find him?
I found him actually when I was probably at my lowest point, when no one was sure if I was going to ever get out of a wheelchair 100% and if what was going to happen to me, if I was ever going to be able to walk around a grocery store again. And he just came into my life and said, I think I can give you some help here. And that's really, for a long time, I thought losing my job, and I felt like losing my life. I just couldn't imagine ever coming back from that. I've been a stay-at-home mom, giving 100% to children and family. And then I was literally counting down on the calendar when I was going to be able to work full-time and have benefits, my own 401k, paid vacation, who ever heard of that? That was the big deal. And then when I lost it all, I just couldn't imagine what was going to happen. But really, through fiber art, painting, and doing my work, this person looked at me one day and said, shall we say that maybe it wasn't such a bad thing, it's all not been for naught? And I remember looking at him and saying, we just shall say it and never go there again. So, but yeah, that's how I happened to meet him. It was really through my injury, or I would never have had time to meet someone like him. To sit or just be sitting somewhere and to run in to meet someone who, you know, also has an extensive private art collection. So I feel like when they make a comment that they know what they're doing, they travel the globe collecting. So, yeah, that's been it's been a great find for me. It's helped me a lot. To always stay steady on what I'm doing.
What does your family think of your art?
My family is very supportive. when I was raising my children, my husband and I, my children would get into my scrapbooks and they would see work that I had painted and drawings that I had done. And they would always ask me when I was going to go back and do it again. And I would look at them and laugh and say, you know, it takes time because I am someone who has to have time. I cannot be doing, like I told you, my tops is three works. But to really do, I believe, quality work, I have to have a quietness, a silence, and they allow me that. They realize it's sort of become my time. And they're very supportive. They'll do whatever need be. Really, if I'm having problems with getting something handled on the computer, they will stop what they're doing and help me. If I need to make a trip cross-country, and I look at my husband and say, I really, really need to do this, even though maybe it's outside our budget, I need to go there at this place. I feel like I should be there. He looks at me and says, okay, we'll go where you go. So, yeah, they're very supportive. I know I can always depend on them.
That's wonderful. How do you balance your time?
Can you clarify that question?
Well, you paint, you do photography, you quilt. You have a family.
Well, what is it? I tell people, I have to say this. I feel like I've gotten selfish, but my husband, that's something he's pushed me towards, to be more selfish with my time, spend more time on myself. And like I say, my children are grown now, but again, it's like your time, Mom. So I never worry. I know dinner needs to be done at a certain time of the day. Or if I'm in a huge project, my husband will come to the door, and I'm like, okay, we need to get dinner somewhere, and he says, no problem. I try to, I don't want to say, when I'm doing watercolor, I would just do watercolor on Sunday afternoons or a day I took class, and I would allow myself to have, like, all day Thursday just for watercolor. And then Sunday after 12 till maybe 5 to just watercolor. And it's kind of the same way with photography. I allow myself a certain time. Fiber art is always present, always in the background. But fiber art can be 7 days a week, how many hours a day I want it to be. But to go outside the box and do something that I want to or have an interest in, I normally have to set a time, and I might set a time on, I've been doing a lot of multimedia, and Tuesday right now is my day for that. But I can't do too many things at once. Like when I started, I wanted to learn more on multimedia, I had to draw the watercolor. I just can't spread myself that thin. And I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't think that part's ever going to happen, and that's okay. I've learned to live with that. And I've realized that if I tried to do fiber art, multimedia, watercolor, and photography all in one day, nothing would get done. Maybe fixing dinner. That would be the end. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that has part to do with aging or not?
No.
Okay, it's just you.
No, I just believe that I have, one of my children has a short-term memory, and when she was a child, it was a lot to deal with, just because, for one thing, nobody could figure out for years what was wrong with her. They just thought she had dyslexia. But, you know, what I've realized as I study and talk to doctors and would drag a poor child from one place to the other trying to find out what was wrong, how to get help for, that, you know, all this comes from someone, and I believe I have dyslexia. Maybe I'm a little, you know, attention deficit disorder. Who knows? I just can't focus, and I've been that way forever. When I go back to when I say the kids would ask me why I wouldn't draw or paint or do something, I knew my focus had to be children and family, and I knew dinner had to be on the table at a certain time. I knew ballet lessons had to be. You know, we had deadlines we had to meet for different functions the children were involved in, with their schoolwork, getting up at a certain time, and that was just my direction. So I've realized I've always been like that and didn't realize it. But it's just come into focus more now. Just, I think, because I have that history behind me, I can look at it. So I don't think aging has anything to do with it. Actually, I feel like the older I get, the more open I am to new ideas and art, and I just have a list of things, more things I want to do, places I want to go. I want 6 hours more a day is what I want. I want a 30-hour day instead of 24.
So there are some things you want to do?
Always.
What are some of the things you want to do?
I'd really like to get into photography a lot more. A lot more. I think art's all about seeing, and I've realized forever that I could, without somebody having to tell me, I've always known about composition. I think photography is one of those great forms of art that you can share with a lot of people. A lot of people are very accepting of it. I'd like to travel to Europe. I'd like to take some classes with some artists over there. And I'm interested in natural dyeing. and I know they have a lot of natural dyeing classes over there. That's like the hubbub for natural dyeing, fabric dyeing, any type of fiber dyeing. I also collect Irish linen. And I know from having gone to Europe to purchase linen, that they are just so advanced on this type of craft, linen, weaving, things like this. They're just, that's where it started. They've been doing it for eons. With it, someone told me once, you keep going over and buying linens, one day there'll be no linens left in the UK. And I said, you don't understand. They're still crocheting lace over there every day. They're just doing wonderful, wonderful crafts, and the government supports it. That's another big, big thing. Our government doesn't support us in our craft, but their government does. So yeah, I've got a. There's a lot more things I want to learn.
Good thing. Do you have any plans to make more Obama art?
I have a second one.
Tell me about it.
It's a screen print, and it's just different. Unfortunately, I'm one of those sort of one-note people. I don't know how much further I'll go. Every once in a while, something comes up in my mind. But I did make another one. The problem right now is I have so many big projects going on that I have timelines on. So maybe when those are done, I have a different screen print of him that I kind of like to work with. But
Is it a head again?
Yes.
How do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as somebody who cared. Someone who cared. Cared about my family. Cared about art. Cared about the world in general. That's what I'd like to be, how I'd like to be remembered.
We're almost near the end. Is there anything else that you would like to share that I haven't asked you?
No, I think you've covered an amazing amount of territory.
I think you did an excellent job.
Thank you.
So I guess we will conclude our interview at 2:14.
Okay.